Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Russian warplanes flew again from an Iranian base for a second day Wednesday, carrying out more airstrikes against targets in Syria. The defense ministry said those targets were Islamic State militants. Meanwhile, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov rejected the assertion by a U.S. spokesman the flights could violate a U.N. Security Council resolution that bans the sale or transfer of combat aircraft to Iran. He said there is no sale or transfer of weaponry, including aircraft. Meanwhile, U.S. spokesman Mark Toner Wednesday repeated the view the Russian use of an airbase in Iran is unhelpful.
It's not helpful because, you know, it continues to complicate what is already a very dangerous situation in and around Aleppo when you have Russia using Iranian airbases as a way to carry out more intensive bombing runs that are hitting, continue to hit, civilian populations.
He said the Russian strikes don't move Syria closer to a cessation of hostilities, only exacerbating a dangerous situation. Microsoft co-founder and philanthropist Bill Gates told VOA Wednesday he's disappointed with news of a new outbreak of polio in Nigeria.
The idea that there's this area up in the northeast of Nigeria around Lake Chad where we found these two cases, that's a disappointment. We're engaged in a very aggressive effort to get vaccines out to as many children as possible in that area and get the number back down to zero. We're quite optimistic we can do that, but we're really trying to understand how we do better surveillance so we don't have a pocket like this in the future.
Gates' foundation has donated billions since 2000 to eradicate polio. Nigeria has launched an emergency campaign to vaccinate millions of children against polio, and the new cases are believed to be the first in 2 years. This is VOA News. Turkey has started releasing about 38,000 prisoners who have less than 2 years left on their sentences. The announcement part of a decree made Wednesday to make room for thousands arrested for allegedly taking part in last month's failed coup attempt. The country's justice minister said the releases are not pardons, but conditional. The government said the failed coup was masterminded by U.S. exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen and carried out by thousands of his supporters within the police and military. Turkey said it's detained more than 40,000 people as its crackdown on suspects continues. The prime minister said nearly 80,000 have been fired from government jobs. More than 4,000 companies and institutions with alleged links to Gulen have been closed. The UN Wednesday said it's investigating a hotel attack in South Sudan in which soldiers raped women and assaulted aid workers, while UN peacekeepers, part of the UNMISS force, failed to act. The July 11th incident took place at the Hotel Terrain during an outbreak of factional fighting in the capital Juba, resulting in one fatality. Farhan Haq is a UN spokesman.
Due to the gravity of these incidents, related allegations, and the preliminary findings by UNMISS, the Secretary General has decided to launch an independent special investigation to determine the circumstances surrounding these incidents and to evaluate the mission's overall response.
He said Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called on South Sudan to investigate these human rights violations and prosecute those involved in what he called these unspeakable acts of violence. A new wildfire in California, fueled by thick brush, extended drought, and blistering temperatures east of Los Angeles, continues to rage unchecked, forcing tens of thousands from their homes. Tommy Laerly lives in San Bernardino County.
I had never seen anything like my whole life, and I've been here since 68. And I've seen this mountain on fire, I've seen these mountains on fire, but this thing's coming around. And I'm afraid of it now.
The Blue Cut fire ignited Tuesday in the mountains of Kijon Pass and quickly expanded to more than 12,000 hectares. Firefighters described it as one of the most intense blazes they've ever seen. At the Rio Olympic Games, Kenya's Conseslus Kipruto took gold in the men's 3,000-meter steeplechase, Kenya's ninth straight gold in the race since 1988. Meanwhile, Jamaica's Elaine Thompson won gold in the women's 200-meter final Wednesday, while fellow countryman Usain Bolt made it to the final Thursday in the men's 200-meter final. American Tiana Bartoletta upset a compatriot to claim gold in the women's long jump, while countryman Brianna Rollins made it a clean sweep by the U.S. in the women's 100-meter hurdles. U.S. central bank policymakers agreed more economic data is needed before an interest rate cut. An interest rate is raised again. The minutes of a late July meeting of the Federal Reserve released Wednesday reveals a relatively upbeat open market committee about the U.S. economic outlook. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August the 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambia's opposition UPND goes to court tomorrow to challenge the August 11th election results.
There are a lot of irregularities that were discovered in the electoral process, as well as deliberate mistakes by the Electoral Commission of Zambia, manipulated a lot of figures which they gave to the sitting president to make him win.
Charles Kakoma is a spokesman for Zambia's main opposition UPND party. South Sudan's rebel leader and former first vice president Riek Machar is expected to break his silence today, having been safely evacuated from South Sudan. And Liberia's embattled Speaker of the House of Representatives refuses to step down after being indicted for alleged corruption.
The chief architect of this ploy is President Eli Johnson Sirleaf, and the chief motive of President Sirleaf is to remove me as Speaker of the House of Representatives, who is seeing in her mind an obstacle in pursuance of our personal political agenda.
J. Alex Tyler is Speaker of the Liberian House of Representatives. Zimbabwe police used tear gas to break up anti-Mugabe protest. U.S. philanthropist Bill Gates speaks exclusively to VOA about the fight against polio in Africa. And the WHO wants countries to record reasons for stillborn and newborn deaths. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zambia's main opposition, the United Party for National Development, UPND, plans to petition the Constitutional Court tomorrow, Friday, to challenge the outcome of the August 11th presidential poll won by incumbent President Edgar Lungu. The UPND also aims to stop the official installation of Mr. Lungu, which is scheduled for next Tuesday. UPDM spokesman Charles Kakoma tells reporter Peter Clotty that his party has evidence to prove that the presidential election was rigged in favor of President Lungu and his ruling Patriotic Front Party.
The United Party for National Development are dissatisfied with the results declared by the Electoral Commission of Zambia, and they were pushing an election petition in the Constitutional Court of Zambia Friday. There are a lot of irregularities that were discovered in the electoral process, as well as deliberate mistakes by the Electoral Commission of Zambia, manipulated a lot of figures which they gave to the sitting president to make him win. And we think that is wrong and should not be allowed. That is doctoring results of an election, and that should not be allowed in a democratic society. So we are going to the court, and also to stop him, by virtue of us going to court, the petitioning will stop him from being inaugurated on Tuesday next week, as they are planning.
What do you think are your prospects of winning this case in court, particularly when your attempt to prevent the Electoral Commission from announcing the result failed spectacularly?
Well, it's a constitutional provision that when there's an election petition, the president-elect should not be sworn in. But we are also confident because the amount of evidence that you have gathered and is documented is so overwhelming that any reasonable court will agree with our arguments.
International poll observer groups have congratulated President Edgar Lungu for winning the presidential election. Several of them said the elections were free, fair, transparent, and credible. You disagree with that. So basically, you are going against the grain here. How do you think that will be successful?
Well, the international observers did not see everything that was going on. For example, we caught somebody in the Electoral Commission of Zambia computer room trying to manipulate the result, and the deputy director in charge of information technology has since been arrested, and those of the international observers might have missed that. So they were hacking the servers for the Electoral Commission and manipulating the results. So the results that were coming to the totaling center where the international observers were had already been hacked and manipulated. They will not have noticed that.
Do you have other opposition parties supporting your petition?
Yes, there are other opposition parties that participated. They have also discovered that their votes were also stolen from them, but they are banking on us as the largest opposition party to challenge the results in the court. They are hoping that they will rally behind us.
Are you only challenging the presidential election?
For now, we are just focusing on the presidential one. The other parliamentary and mayoral, that will be considered later, and the individual candidates that feel aggrieved will take that matter to our High Court and not the Constitutional Court.
Does the UPND still stand by its call for some senior officials of the Electoral Commission of Zambia to be forced out of their positions?
Yes, we had put it in writing. We wrote a letter to the Electoral Commission to have three of their senior people suspended from the commission and not to be involved in the electoral process because they were either biased or suspected to be assisting the criminals that were hacking the Electoral Commission servers.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development, UPND. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. South Sudan rebel leader and former first vice president in the transitional government of national unity, Riek Machar, is suspected to break his silence today, Thursday, since he went into hiding early July following clashes between his supporters and those of President Salva Kiir. Mabio Garange de Mabio, chairman of the SPLMIO National Committee for Information and Public Relations, says Mr. Machar has been safely evacuated to a country in the East African subregion. President Salva Kiir sacked Machar last month and replaced him with Taba Den Guy, former rebel chief peace negotiator. Mabio, who spoke to VOA from Nairobi, could not say which country Mr. Machar had been evacuated to, except that Machar will hold a news conference today, Thursday.
He was evacuated from South Sudan after being attacked in Juba, so he has been hunted for all these times. A few days ago, he was successfully evacuated to a country in the region. He has since now traveled from that country and he's going to one of the IGAD countries. So within 24 hours, as I've expressed in the press statement, he will be making a statement to the media.
Now, you say he was successfully evacuated. Who evacuated him? And is he in Africa and which African country?
Well, I don't want to disclose that information now because it is still a sensitive time. But the members of the political bureau here have been in touch with some friendly neighboring countries who assisted us. And the information will be disclosed as time goes, but the information is still a bit secret at the moment.
So you say Dr. Riek Machar is en route to an IGAD country. Is it Kenya or to Ethiopia? Where is he going?
Like I said, all this information is still sensitive and the enemies of peace are still pursuing him. So we don't want to disclose this information. This is as much as we are saying at the moment that he has been successfully evacuated from South Sudan and he went to a neighboring country, which is not an IGAD country, and he's now headed to one of the IGAD countries so that we can continue with the processes of returning to the peace agreement.
Mr. Dimambio, you said in your release that the SPLMIO is committed to the full implementation of United Nations resolution and the agreement. But the person who claims to have succeeded Dr. Riek Machar, Taban Dam, is saying that Dr. Machar should wait for elections in 2018.
Yeah, perhaps General Taban has not read the agreement or he's ignoring the provisions of the agreement, but like I said, this shows ignorance of international law. But if we are to follow the legal procedures, then it is very clear. It is not a matter of argument or of I want. You know, it is a matter of going to the agreement. And so if our interest is what is in the best interest of the people of South Sudan, then General Taban will resign from his position. Because when he even first began his moves to illegally take over, he had claimed that he was going to act in the place of Dr. Machar, and then all of a sudden it changed, and he was illegally appointed.
You say Dr. Riek Machar has been safely evacuated. Now, where was he hiding? Was he in South Sudan following the violence?
Yes, he was in South Sudan, and after withdrawing from Juba, he has been with the forces. And like I stated earlier, he was being pursued by the forces, which we are yet to establish who exactly is commanding these forces. They pursued him from the day after the 11th. The government is misinforming the public that there was a ceasefire and that the forces returned. This is not true. They have been pursuing the first vice president, and so he has been constantly on the move, changing location. They have been tracking his phone. This is why he has kept silent all this time. And so he has been on the run until he reached one of the borders and he was safely evacuated.
Mambio Grande Mambio is chairman of the SPLM-IO National Committee for Information and Public Relations. You are speaking with me from Nairobi, Kenya. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Thursday, August 18th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe police Wednesday clashed with anti-government protesters in Harare's central business district, leaving several people injured. Thomas Chiripasi has details from Harare.
A large number of Tajamukase's Jikile campaign members gathered in downtown Harare, holding flowers and carrying placards while singing revolutionary songs. The demonstrators demanded President Robert Mugabe's immediate resignation for allegedly failing to run the affairs of Zimbabwe. One of the protest leaders, Promise Mukwananzi, said it was worrisome that the government was failing to pay its workers and address the cash crisis in local banks.
Please understand us. We are one of you. We are doing this for our country together. We are doing this so that things can be better for everyone.
Another prominent activist, Sten Zorwadza, told the demonstrators that Mr. Mugabe's government has misplaced the priorities.
But what we want at this particular moment in time is to be able to do this uniformly, peacefully. But the point is we want to demilitarize the state because the police was demilitarized and the soldiers are militarized, the police are militarized, everyone is militarized. And we want to try and work it so that peace prevails.
When the protesters started marching to the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, where they intended to submit their petition over the worsening cash shortages, heavily armed anti-riot police pounced on them, resulting in the protesters running in different directions. Some of the angry demonstrators pelted police officers with stones, resulting in police firing tear gas and using water cannons to disperse them. Mukwananzi told Studio 7 by phone after the protest that more than 15 people were injured during the clashes. Meanwhile, political commentator Sidney Chisi, director of the Youth Initiative for Democracy in Zimbabwe, told Studio 7 that today's heavy-handedness of the police shows that President Mugabe's government is in panic mode.
I think what we begin to see is that the government has gone into a very serious panic mode and they have switched on a panic button.
Tajamuka says it will escalate the protests until Mr. Mugabe leaves office. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
An intense power struggle is underway for the leadership of the Liberian House of Representatives that some say is on the verge of paralyzing the entire government. Two groups of lawmakers, one seeking the removal of Speaker Alex Tyler and the other supporting the Speaker, held parallel sessions this week. And meanwhile, President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has instructed her cabinet not to do business with the two sides until the stalemate is broken. Titi Jibro reports from Monrovia.
I'm not going to recuse myself because I know I'm innocent until proven guilty. To do that is the wrong precedent. Is that the kind of precedent we want to set as lawmakers? I think it's unfortunate.
House Speaker Alex Tyler's description of attempts by some of his colleagues to have him removed. It all started more than 3 months back after the Speaker was indicted for alleged bribery predicated on a report by the London-based Global Witness. The report alleges that over 950,000 in bribes and other suspicious payments were made to top Liberian officials by the United Kingdom-based mining company and its Liberian lawyer, Vannie Sherman, to secure a mining concession. The report alleges that Speaker Tyler received $75,000 as consulting fees. Weeks following Speaker Tyler's indictment, some of his colleagues launched a campaign for him to recuse himself from his position on moral grounds, according to them. Speaker Tyler has refused to recuse himself, accusing President Sirleaf instead of being the mastermind.
The chief of this ploy is President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, and the chief motive of President Sirleaf is to remove me as Speaker of the House of Representatives, who is seeing in her mind an obstacle in pursuance of our personal political agenda.
Since the speaker's accusations against President Sirleaf, the number of lawmakers calling for his recusal has grown significantly. There have been claims and counterclaims of huge sums of money being dished out from both sides. Flanked by her colleagues on August 9, Manseredo County District 9 Representative Munam Pelham Youngblood read a resolution in the rotunda of the legislature calling for the removal of the speaker.
That we, the majority members of the Honorable House of Representatives of the Federal Legislature, in furtherance of our mandate and obligation to the Liberian people, as contained in Chapter 5 of the Constitution of the Republic of Liberia, do hereby and now petition and declare to the Liberian people that Honorable J. Alex Taylor had lost the legitimacy and popular consent to preside over the House of Representatives, having been indicted by the state with more than one criminal offenses.
According to Representative Youngblood, 39 of 73 lawmakers signed the resolution calling for the speaker's recusal. Article 38 of the Liberian Constitution calls for each house of the legislature to expel a member for a cause with the concurrence of two-thirds of the entire membership, a number the anti-Taylor lawmakers are yet to get. In the wake of all this, President Sirleaf has instructed her cabinet not to do business with the two factions of the House of Representatives, with all three branches of the Liberian government at the center of this long-running controversy. It appears the government will remain paralyzed. Titi Jiro, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
American businessman and philanthropist Bill Gates says he is optimistic about the chances of one day having a polio-free world. His comments Wednesday came on the day that Nigeria said it has launched a mass campaign of emergency polio vaccinations after reporting two new cases of the disease earlier this month. Mr. Gates and his wife, Melinda, have a foundation that has contributed immensely to funding health programs in Africa and elsewhere around the globe. In this exclusive interview, Gates tells viewers Lino Mondu that while the news from Nigeria is disappointing, efforts are underway to get vaccines to the affected areas as quickly as possible.
It was very exciting that we went 2 years without any cases, and the idea that there's this area up in the northeast of Nigeria around Lake Chad where we found these two cases, that's a disappointment. We're engaged in a very aggressive effort to get vaccines out to as many children as possible in that area and get the number back down to zero. We're quite optimistic we can do that, but we're really trying to understand how we do better surveillance so we don't have a pocket like this in the future.
So in light of this development, and when we look at the big picture, it is one thing to interrupt transmission. It is another thing to stay polio-free. So how does Africa sustain the hard-won gains in keeping polio at bay to be declared polio-free one day, really?
Well, the good news is that the intensity of the campaigns has been maintained. Nigeria at one point was over half the cases in the world, and many people said to us, hey, can you really succeed in Nigeria? If we go and look at the level of immunization, even up in the north where the health systems are more challenging, we've got that at quite a high level. So if we can get rid of this pocket, then it'll cement the change. In parallel, we're still working in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And so we feel really good about where we are despite this setback. We've got a great team up there. The government's working with us. We need to access kids, and we need for people to understand the importance of getting all the kids to take this oral polio vaccine.
That was U.S. businessman and philanthropist Bill Gates. You can hear more of his interview today, Thursday, on VOA's Health Chat program with host Lino Mundu. The World Health Organization is issuing new guidelines aimed at preventing stillborn and newborn deaths. The UN agency says recording the cause of death is one of the key steps to preventing these tragedies. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Each year, approximately 2.6 million babies are stillborn, and 2.7 million babies die during the first 28 days of life, mostly in South Asia and sub-Saharan Africa, according to the WHO. While progress has been made in reducing the number of maternal deaths, the agency notes more than 300,000 women per year still die during pregnancy and childbirth. The WHO's Director of Reproductive Health and Research, Ian Askew, says the key to preventing these deaths is knowledge. He says the number of global infant deaths is grossly underestimated because many countries do not know how many babies die or why this is happening. He says nearly all stillborn and half of all newborn deaths are not recorded and no death certificates are issued.
So these numbers are estimates. And the second problem we face is that because there is no record of the birth or the death of the infant, then it's very hard to know why exactly the death occurred. What happened? What was the cause of the death?
Research sheds light on the causes. It shows infant deaths may happen because of complications during labor or delivery. Some may be associated with an infection in the mother, particularly among women who have diabetes or hypertension, or there may be a problem with the growth of the fetus itself. But Askew notes it is hard for countries to know how to prevent these deaths if they do not document the causes. He tells VOA traditional practices or beliefs often hinder the gathering of vital data on infant deaths.
In many countries, there may be greater stigma around newborn death or around stillbirths that has been historically holding back registering these, particularly with stillbirths, where there may be cultural determinations around whether the birth represents a life or not. And so there are many reasons why this guidance is needed.
Askew says countries that are able to review the causes of maternal and infant deaths can improve the quality of health care and take corrective actions that ultimately can prevent millions of these tragic deaths from happening. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of news. The co-founder of Microsoft, Bill Gates, has expressed optimism that Nigeria will be able to defeat polio despite intense challenges that make it hard to immunize children in the most vulnerable areas. Gates told VOA's Africa 54 program Wednesday that two newly reported cases of polio in Nigeria are a disappointment after so much success, not only in Africa, but in Pakistan and Afghanistan, the only other countries where polio is still endemic. Bill Gates said he is quite optimistic that as many kids as possible can be protected in northern Nigeria. Two members of the U.S. swim team, Gunnar Bent and Jack Conger, were stopped and detained at the Rio de Janeiro International Airport as they tried to travel home Wednesday, the U.S. Olympic Committee confirmed. The move by police comes as they continue to investigate claims made by fellow swimmer Ryan Lochte that the three, along with teammates James Fenger, were robbed earlier this week by men who identified themselves as police officers. Earlier Wednesday, a judge issued an order preventing Lochte and Fenger from leaving the country, stating that they gave conflicting testimonies about being robbed earlier this week. Balakte's father told the Associated Press his son returned to the U.S. before the order was issued on Wednesday. That's it for this Thursday, August 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Zubair El Tayeb, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. Some things change, some remain the same. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC GMT right here on VOA Africa.
Hello.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.